turn with me in your Bibles, if you will, to 1 Samuel chapter 9. We read a passage earlier about shepherds, good shepherds and bad ones. Shepherd, we tend to use the figure of speech today a little bit more to refer to religious leaders, pastors, so forth. But shepherd in ancient times, in the times that 1 Samuel was written, would actually more often be used to refer to civil leaders. Kings and emperors of the ancient world would often refer to themselves as the shepherds of their people. They were the ones that guided and protected and provided for and fed their nations. Take up here today the story of Saul. As for a time, the shepherd of Israel. The figure of speech of a shepherd is a good one and an apt one. And it's no surprise that it came to stand for leadership in many ways. Many of the leaders of Israel were shepherds before they were leaders. Moses, Abraham, Jacob, David, as we'll see in a little bit, were all shepherds, herdsmen. A shepherd, his job is to protect the flock from danger, to meet with violence anybody who would harm the sheep, anything that would harm the sheep, wolves or bears or lions and so forth, thieves and robbers. And provide security, safety, prosperity for the sheep. And it's telling, foreshadowing, no accident, that the story of Saul, the king of Israel, begins with his inability to find his father's lost donkeys. Let's read 1 Samuel chapter 9. There was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Bechorath, the son of Aphiah, a Benjamite, a mighty man of power. And he had a choice and handsome son, whose name was Saul. There was not a more handsome person than he among the children of Israel. From his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. Now the donkeys of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. And Kish said to his son, Saul, please take one of the servants with you and arise and go and look for the donkeys. So he passed through the mountains of Ephraim and through the lands of Shalisha, but they did not find them. Then they passed through the land of Sha'alim, and they were not there. Then he passed through the land of the Benjamites, but he did not find them. When they had come to the land of Zuph, Saul said to his servant who was with him, Come, let us return, lest my father cease caring about the donkeys and become worried about us. And he said to him, Look now, there is in this city a man of God, and he is an honorable man, and all that he says surely comes to pass. So let us go there. Perhaps he can show us the way that we should go. And then Saul said to his servant, But look, if we go, what shall we bring the man? For the bread in our vessels is all gone, and there is no present to bring to the man of God. What do we have? The servant answered Saul again and said, Look, I have here at hand 1/4 of a shekel of silver. I will give that to the man of God to tell us our way. Formerly in Israel, when a man went to inquire of God, he spoke thus, Come, let us go to the seer. For he who is now called a prophet was formerly called a seer. But then Saul said to his servant, Well said, come, let us go. So he went to the city where the man of God was. As they went up the hill to the city, they met some young women going out to draw water and said to them, Is the seer here? And they answered them and said, Yes, there he is, just ahead of you. Hurry now, for today he came to this city because there is a sacrifice of the people today on the high place. And as soon as you come into the city, you will surely find him before he goes up to the high place to eat. For the people will not eat until he comes, because he must bless the sacrifice. Afterwards, those who are invited will eat. Now, therefore, go up, for about this time you will find him. So they went up to the city. As they were there, coming into the city, there was Samuel coming out toward them on his way up to the high place. Now the Lord had told Samuel in his ear the day before Saul came, saying, "Tomorrow about this time I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin, and you shall anoint him commander over my people Israel, that he may save my people from the hand of the Philistines. For I have looked upon my people, because their cry has come to me." So when Samuel saw Saul, the Lord said to him, "There he is, the man of whom I spoke to you. This one shall reign over my people." Then Saul drew near to Samuel in the gates and said, "Please tell me, where is the seer's house?" Samuel answered Saul and said, "I am the seer. Go up before me to the high place, for you shall eat with me today. And tomorrow I will let you go and will tell you all that is in your heart. But as for your donkeys that were lost 3 days ago, do not be anxious about them, for they have been found. And on whom is all the desire of Israel? Is it not on you and on all your father's house?" And Saul answered and said, "Am I not a Benjamite, to the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family the least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin? Why then do you speak to me like this?" Now Samuel took Saul and his servants and brought them into the hall and had them sit in the place of honor among those who were invited. There were about 30 persons. And Samuel said to the cook, "Bring the portion which I gave you, of which I said to you, set it apart." So the cook took up the thigh with its upper parts and set it before Saul. And Samuel said, "Here it is, what was kept back. It was set apart for you. Eat. For until this time it has been kept for you since I said I invited the people." So Saul ate with Samuel that day. When they had come down from the high place into the city, Samuel spoke with Saul on the top of the house. They arose early, and it was about the dawning of the day that Samuel called to Saul on the top of the house, saying, "Get up, that I may send you on your way." And Saul arose, and both of them went outside, he and Samuel. As they were going out down to the outskirts of the city, Samuel said to Saul, "Tell the servant to go on ahead of us." And he went on. "But you stand here a while, that I may announce to you the word of God." So as we said, Saul is trying to find some number of lost donkeys. He travels around quite a way over the course of several days. They can't find them. And after a while, they're running out of food, they're running out of money. Saul begins to be worried that his father is going to forget about the donkeys and worry about him. So he says, "We should return." At the suggestion of his servant, tells him about the man of God who is nearby. He says, "Why don't we go see the man of God, Samuel, the seer? And we can ask him. He will surely know. He's an honorable man." And so Saul likes the plan. They go to Samuel. But God has told Samuel that he is going to bring to him the man who is to be king. And so God points out Saul again to Samuel and said, "This is the one." And so Samuel invites him to share in the sacrificial meal with him. And we'll prepare to anoint him. At the same time, he tells him not to worry about the donkeys. The donkeys are already home, Samuel tells Saul. This is the man. This is our introduction to the man who God would make king over Israel. The man who was to be the king like the nations around them. And we see here God's commentary, if you will, on the values that the world puts on their leaders. What sorts of things the nations of the world look to in a leader. It's interesting that the main thing, the most striking thing we read about Saul right off the bat when we are introduced to him is that he was handsome. He was tall. He was, he said, a full head taller, on average from the shoulders up, a head taller than the people of Israel generally were. And he was handsome. He was, there was said there was not a more handsome man in all of Israel. Saul is the only king of Israel that is ever identified as tall. And David is identified later as handsome. But that reference to David's appearance is very brief and short compared to the glowing description we have of Saul's physical appearance here. Further, he came from a prominent family. His father was a, it says, was a mighty man of power, the Benjamite, Kish. Saul downplays the prominence of his family later in humility, but it says here that he was a mighty man of power, which would indicate wealth, perhaps, or influence, or probably both. He was a prominent man, an important man, a tall and handsome, choice man. This is what we see about Saul. Saul certainly had many good qualities about him. He was a good leader. In the stories that we'll read in the future, we see that even before he was officially recognized as king, that he led the people of Israel against the Ammonites to defend the Jebusites, and many, many flocked to his banner. He showed mercy on those who at first had refused his rule. He was able to inspire great loyalty in his followers. He had a great many followers that stuck with him, even through all of the troubles, right down to when Saul died. They stuck with Saul. God would use Saul to bring a measure of security to the people of Israel for a time, defend them from the Philistines, as he says here in the story. What did Saul lack? Well, again, our introduction to him, the way that God, through the Spirit, chooses to introduce the man Saul to us is telling. This is a man with no godliness. This is a man with no personal piety. He lives a few miles away from Samuel, who has been judging Israel and guiding and directing Israel in the ways of the Lord for decades now, and he doesn't even know about him. His servant has to tell him about the man of God. He's completely unfamiliar with the sacrificial rituals. The women of the village have to explain it to him, how it is that the feasts and the sacrifices work. He and his servant think they'll take some money and bribe the seer as if he was a pagan soothsayer that needed to be paid for his services. There's no familiarity, no understanding of the religious law and rituals of Israel. And of course, the rest of Saul's career will simply bear out that religion to him, the things of God to him, were at best a necessary annoyance to him. Something that he needed to do. Later on, when he is caught violating the law of God, and he's accused by Samuel of having offered the sacrifices himself illegitimately instead of waiting for Samuel to do it, his only concern is that Samuel not tell the people and undermine his rule. He's not a godly man at all. And it is that very lack of godliness, it is that very that total absence of concern for the things of God, for the true knowledge and worship of God, ends up being the cause of Saul's downfall as a king. God is dramatically showing Israel and us the result, what you get when you choose for your leadership men that are like the nations round about them. The men of Israel wanted the glory of the nations around them. They wanted the power, the pomp, the show, the security that they thought these nations had. But when you choose leadership for selfish and ungodly reasons, you should not be surprised when the leader you get is selfish and ungodly. And that's what they got. They got a man who looked good on the surface, who had the pomp and the show and the glory that they wanted. A tall and handsome and strong and powerful, charismatic leader. Just like the leaders of the world, just like the people that the men of this world are constantly choosing, constantly looking for to save them from the problems of this world. And the result with Saul was predictable, just as it so often is when we put our hope and our trust in the men of this world. But people are always looking for leaders to save them. Looking for these leaders, looking for the right man to come along. If only we have the right candidate, if only we elect the right person, if only the right visionary would rise up to unite us all, then we could overcome, then we could accomplish, then we could create the society we want. God had always granted Israel the leaders it needed. Always raised up for them men to accomplish what it was that God needed to accomplish. To protect them from their enemies. To call them back to faithfulness. And when those judges, when those people had performed the function that God had for them to perform, then they would withdraw. Then they would go back to private life. They would give up the rule of his people, as the judges so often did. The people of Israel, even on many occasions, invited those judges to be tyrants over them. Like they said to Gideon, "You rule over us, you and your sons' sons." And Gideon said, "No, God will rule over you." Because that was the intention for Israel, that God would rule over them, not these men. God would provide what they needed. And sometimes God would provide that through the figures of particular leaders that would raise up to serve particular functions. But it was God that would rule over them, provide for them, give them prosperity, security, safety. And when they rejected God, which they did over and over again, when they refused to be ruled by God's law, then inevitably they looked to men to save them. They looked to people to rule over them, to provide for them what they should have looked to God to provide for them. And the result was always the same, that they fell into tyranny as they came under the rule of incompetent and wicked and abusive men. The kings that Israel desired, that they asked God, that they demanded Samuel give them, those kings were a disaster for Israel. Saul will read about his reign and everything that came as a result of that. David was certainly better than Saul, but still David's own personal sins brought many calamities on the nation of Israel. War and civil war and plague. Solomon started out well, ended up being the avenue by which idolatry was brought back into Jerusalem. And as a consequence of Solomon's reign, the nation was split. And Solomon was about as good as it ever got. It all went downhill from there, for the most part. The kings of Israel were the avenue by which wickedness and idolatry came into the nation. They consistently made decisions that benefited themselves at the cost of the people. They taxed the people heavily. They wasted their natural resources. They wasted their human potential. Made disastrous alliances with nations around them that led to their exile and enslavement. The story of Saul begins with him unable to find his father's donkeys, and it ends with the people of Israel scattered across the land by their enemies. Ezekiel 34 that we read earlier condemns the shepherds of Israel, both the religious and the political leaders of Israel. Shepherds ought to take care of the flock. But instead, he views the flock as existing to serve him, to feed him. If they had owned the flock, if the flock was theirs, if they were their sheep, then the one who owns the flock certainly has the right to do with the flock what he chooses to do. But it was not the shepherd's flock. It was God's flock. It was God's flock, and he had put these shepherds over them. The analogy would be if you had hired someone to care for your animals, to care for your sheep that you desired, and then that hireling didn't do his job, let the weak and the sick wander off and get eaten by wolves, and fed himself as he desired, that he did not regard the good of the flock. He simply fed himself with the flock and allowed the flock at the same time to suffer at the hands of all sorts of wild beasts and bandits. And that's what the leaders of Israel did. That's what the leaders of this world do. If the nation doesn't belong to the king, the congregation doesn't belong to the priest, to the prophets, the people belong to God. And the leaders that God raises up to put over his people are there to do the work that God gives them to do, and that's all. But when the people reject the rule of God, it is inevitable that they will come under the rule of these wicked men. They will look to human strength and wisdom for their salvation. They will look to glorious leaders, the so-called great men of this world. It's inevitable, and we've seen it over and over again in history. As people reject the rule of God, as they reject the righteousness which God taught them, then in fear and terror at the things that are around them, all the dangers of this world, all the evil men of this world, the terrors of famine and plague and natural disasters and war and so forth, they look to the great men of this world to save them. Visionaries and strong men, tall, handsome, powerful, charismatic leaders. And over and over and over again, the same thing happens, that these tall and handsome and charismatic and powerful leaders bring people into slavery and bondage. Rejecting the will of God, men will look to the power of man to save them. And it's a fool's dream, and it always has been. Because if we reject the rule of God, we must understand it is God's judgment itself that we must fear. The strength of men can't save us from the judgment of God. Rejecting God, fearing their enemies, the Israelites put a great deal of power into the hands of these kings. And those kings used that power to feed themselves and not to take care of the people. But why should they be surprised? Again, if they have rejected godliness and selfishly and rebelliously chose kings to rule over them, why should they be shocked and surprised when those kings were selfish and rebellious men? Why should we be surprised if you have a pastor who has rejected the truth of God's word, has decided that he will decide for himself what the Bible means and what the church is and how people ought to be governed in the church? Why should you be surprised when that pastor then misuses the money of the church for his own benefits? Why should we be surprised when we reject the rule of God that we will be ruled over by men who have likewise rejected the rule of God? Do we have any right to complain? The science fiction writer Philip K. Dick once said in response to the question, "What is real?" He said, "Reality is that which when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away." And it's a very apt quote. Describes well the situation in Israel. They had stopped believing in God, stopped trusting in God, stopped believing in Him as He revealed Himself, but He didn't go away. He didn't stop existing because they stopped believing in Him. And God today does not stop existing when people stop putting their trust in Him. The men of this world can't save us from economic hardship. The men of this world cannot save us from war. They cannot protect us from natural disaster. And the reason why is because all of those things come on us as a result of the judgment of God. How can man protect us from the judgment of God? And the fact is that those men that people choose to protect themselves from the evil things in the world end up being part of that judgment itself. that God gives them over to foolishness and blindness so that they choose for themselves leaders who enslave them and brutalize them. Ultimately, then, the false shepherds of the world can't save us from the evil of the world, because the evil of the world is God's judgment for rejecting His will, for rejecting His rule. This is how it was with Israel. Those kings which Israel looked to save them from their enemies, those kings that they looked to save them from the nations around them in rebellion against God's rule, those kings ended up being a big part of God's punishment on them for rejecting that rule. Only by submitting to God's rule, submitting to His will, submitting to His redemption, can the judgment and the wrath of God be averted. And that means submitting to the true shepherd. And God promises in Ezekiel 34 that He will provide a shepherd for His people. He will provide safety and prosperity and peace for His shepherd. As David in Psalm 23, David, who was the best shepherd that Israel ever had. And what did he say? He said, "The Lord is my shepherd." It's the Lord that provides for us. It's the Lord that protects us. It's the Lord that gives us safety. Not the men of this world. 1 and 2 Samuel both draw out the need. They show so clearly over the long scope of history. They show the need so clearly for a permanent solution to the problem. How badly Israel needed a shepherd who would rule over them in truth and righteousness. And God promises to provide that shepherd. That He, as their true shepherd, would raise up a man. A man who would be the seed of David, a man who would sit on the throne of David forever, who would be a true shepherd, who would truly provide for His people. He makes that promise in 2 Samuel 7. The line of David would continue forever. The seed of David would sit on the throne of Jerusalem forever. The prophets draw this out more. We see that that seed of David is the Messiah, the Anointed One. It is Jesus Christ. He is that one. We still have civil magistrates that God raises up that are to perform particular functions. We still have religious rulers who have particular jobs to do. And the civil and religious leaders of this world do the best that they can do when they limit themselves only to the functions which God has given them in His Word. And when we realize that those political, religious leaders cannot provide safety for us. They cannot provide prosperity, knowledge, understanding for us. They cannot feed God's people truly. Only Christ can do that. We ought look to no earthly organization, no man or group of men, no pastor, no politician, no military leader that will ever provide for us the things that we truly need, can ever provide for us safety and security from the curse of sin on the world. They can never provide for us the deepest meaning in our lives. They can never provide for us real truth. When the politician points you to himself and he says, "You elect me and I will give you safety and I will give you security, I will give you prosperity and all of these things," that man is a liar, that man is a charlatan. When the pastor points you to himself instead of pointing you to the Word of God, the man is a liar and a charlatan, a false shepherd who desires to feed himself instead of feeding the sheep. Because we have only one true shepherd, the Good Shepherd. We keep waiting for the right man to be elected, the right man to rise up. Beloved people of God, the right man has already been raised up and he's not running for election. The right man will never be elected. The right man will never be your pastor. The right man will never be the figure who provides all that you need. That man is Christ. He has already come. He is sitting on the throne in heaven. He is your good shepherd. As our prophet, it is His Word delivered by His Spirit who teaches us everything that we need to know, who reveals to us the deepest secrets of the world. as our King. It is He who provides safety and security for us. It is He who leads us to green pastures. It is He who puts the food on our table and the clothes on our back. It is He who keeps us safe from every enemy. It is He who laid down His life for the safety and security of the sheep. And as our great high priest, He intercedes for us daily before God on the basis of His one perfect sacrifice. He reconciles us to God. He creates friendship, fellowship between God and man. Every need that we have is met in Jesus Christ. And our story here even signals that to us. It was the man of God, the one who God had raised up, who knew where Saul's lost donkeys were. He told them right where they were. He said, they're already home. You don't have to worry about it. Saul was unable to care for them. Saul was unable to care for the people of Israel. But God was not unable. God took care of His people. And so when we're confronted with the dangers and the uncertainties of this life, when we believe that these things are in God's hands, then we will look to God for the answers. The men of this world, they talk a good game, but they have no real solutions. What have the men of this world accomplished? What have they achieved? One long record of misery and mismanagement and incompetence and cruelty. What have the religious leaders and gurus of this world that dream their dreams, that have their ideas, that say, I will tell you the truth. I will teach you the secrets of the universe. What have they ever accomplished? The men of this world are like the gods they worship, the prophet says. They have eyes, but they don't see. They have ears, but they don't hear. They have hands, but they can't save. Despite Saul's appearance of power and strength and virtue and charisma, he was ultimately an incompetent, cruel fool. The religious dreams of men may appear to be godly and profound, but they will not lead us to truth. The political and economic schemes of this world may appear on paper to be very profound and interesting and inspiring, but they won't give us safety and security or prosperity. They're lies. And because they're lies, they'll never succeed. The men of Babel may have appeared to be very wise and powerful. And they dreamed their dreams and they inspired great followings. Let us build our tower. We'll build our city. But their city and their tower remains unbuilt to this day. The empires of the world have fallen. The dreams of the world of the Napoleons and the Caesars and the Alexanders have come and gone and have failed over and over again to deliver on their promises. And how many elections have we endured where promises were unkept, where dreams were unfulfilled? Look to God for salvation. And I don't mean just in some abstract mystical sense about what happens after you die. I mean look to God for the solution to our political problems in this country. Look to God for the economic solutions we need. Look to God for the right way to think about global warming, environmental problems, military threats overseas. God knew where Saul's lost donkeys were. God knows where your 401k is too. He knows where your kids are. He knows how your health is. He knows what's going on with that tumor in your body. He knows everything that you need. Because He is a good shepherd. And He always cares for His people. The men of the world cannot save you. The preachers preaching their own idea that they cannot give you wisdom or comfort. The rulers devising their own plans and schemes cannot protect you or give you justice. Only God can. Trust in Him. Commit to doing things His way. Trust in the one good shepherd, the man that God raised up, His Son, Jesus Christ. Because He can save you. And He's the only one that can.